Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I am Joseph, he's Patrick, and he's Jay, and we keep it funky every week here on the Freedom Train podcast series. If you don't know, now you know. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. CTSINC, and PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on economics and education with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can go to the website, learn more about the organization itself, learn more about the members, click on the different tabs, that way you can learn about the different components of the organization. Make sure you click on one specific tab that says the code, so you can learn about the codes of conduct that PAX Inc. have created for Black America. And then peruse through, you will also see a tab that leads you to the educational materials where you can learn more. It's like a digital library of educational materials, black history, culture, politics, all those things that you can learn about Black America. And once again, the website is www.pactsinc.org. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. We have a host of new shows. Make sure you, I'm going to give you the weekly lineup. Every Monday, you are going to get The Fix, the sports podcast, hosted by myself, and you will get a live broadcast of Office Hours with Professor Carlton Jones and Erica Tober at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Wednesday, you will get the Freedom Train podcast series. Every Thursday, you will get Lessons from the Screen, which is the new show hosted by Patrick. So, and we have some more shows that are going to be coming up. Tea Time, Black Women Talk is going to be coming up, and Jamie's new show is going to be coming up very soon. So I'll let Jamie talk about that. Jay, go ahead, tell them about your show, Jay.
Hey, man, you put me all on the spot in the first of the show. Now, we got a little something coming at you. It's already in the works. The game plan is down. Just tweaking a few things. And once we get that timing, man, it's coming right at y'all. So it's coming. It's coming.
Okay. Mr. Vague.
Yeah, you got to be vague, man. You got to be guessing a little bit.
Mr. Vegas. Pat, what's up? Tell them about your show. You pat it already out. Pat, matter of fact, Lessons from the Screen is... you can catch the first two episodes on our website. And you can it's on our YouTube channel. So you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or Google Play, because the first two episodes of Lessons from the Screen is on there. But Pat, for those who don't know, tell them a little bit about your show, man.
Well, Lessons from the Screen is a show where we give people a short synopsis of what any particular thing is about. It could be a documentary, it could be a document, anything that you can get from a screen, which in this day and age is damn near everything. We give you a short synopsis of what it is, and then we give you some lessons that can be used, can be pulled from that to help the black community better itself. And then, you know, we end it all off by giving you a location or a place where you can go and watch it or read it or have access to it for yourself. So it's short. It's only about 22 minutes. That's to account for the future sponsorships and commercials. So, yeah, it's every Thursday.
Yeah. And... like I said, remember, follow us, follow Freedom Train Network on Instagram, follow the Freedom Train on Instagram at Freedom Train Network, follow the Freedom Train on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Like I said, like our Freedom Train Facebook page, subscribe to us on YouTube, subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play. You can also subscribe to the Office Hours with Professor Carlton Jones and Erica Tober on iTunes and Google Play. The Fix Sports Podcast is on iTunes and Google Play. Lessons from the Screen is on iTunes and Google Play. And, of course, the Freedom Train Podcast is on iTunes and Google Play. So the network is coming straight at you. So put your 3D glasses on. All right, so today we got some topics for you. We're going to the African continent. We're going to kind of break down some things that happened within the governments of Libya and Zimbabwe. And kind of put some pieces together and bring some light to, one, the slave trade in Libya, as well as the fallout of what happened with former President Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. But first, we're going to start with the slave trade in Libya, because it's a that's a multi-layered situation, and we may not have time to get into all the layers, but we do want to kind of get a good understanding, give a good understanding of what's going on in Libya and why it's going on. To Pat, James.
What's cracking?
Y'all ready to do this?
Let's get it.
Hey, man, so, all right. In Libya, we have over the last couple of weeks, videos have been flooding social media of a slave trade going on, a modern day slave trade going on in Libya. But I do want people to understand, slave trades never really ended in this world, especially with black people. But light is being brought to the slave trade that's going on in Libya. I have seen numerous videos. I know Pat and I have had different conversations about this over the last couple of weeks. I've seen numerous videos about some of the people who are enslaved speaking out about what's going on. There have been different people who have been bringing light to it. Not many people have been bringing light to it, but the social media has done a good job of allowing us to get a view of what's going on. And so we're going to get deep into this, because I've seen videos that go back, videos where some of the men who were a part of the slave trade who were talking about how since 2013 this thing has been going on. But this, in my opinion, this is coming from the fallout of what happened after Gaddafi was killed in Libya, and we're starting to see the effects of a leaderless country and what happens when black people, well, just what's been happening to black people over the centuries, over the millennia. This is really nothing new, but we do want to make sure that we give good context and good information. So, Pat, you the numbers man. Tell us what you know. Let's start with some numbers, man. Let's start with some facts. You the computer man. You the computer brain.
To give a little bit of backstory, basically earlier this month, last month, November 2017, some pictures were floated around Facebook, social media, showing pictures of black people being tied up, beaten, and whatnot. And even, you know, some of the people being held at gunpoint, with a caption over it that talked about the slave trade in Libya. So that's what first got people talking. Now, I want to point out, as with most things involving social media, the vast majority of that post was not true. But the core theme of it, slave trade in Libya, was. It's just that the pictures that they showed were not from a slave trade in Libya. Some of those pictures were from instances in Africa that happened years 2011, 2009, 2007. One of those pictures wasn't even of anything in the African continent, on the African continent. So that got people interested. And then later on in November, a video footage came out showing an auction. And that really has gotten people super, super, super excited about this issue. And I use the term excited because that's exactly what they are. Like, this issue has been going on for a while. It's probably not going to change. But now it's something new for people to talk about. So that's what they're going to talk about. In terms of the numbers, when we begin to talk about the slave trade, there are estimated 40 million people living in slavery in the modern world. 40, and that's a lot of people. I don't like. Come on, that's a lot of fucking people. 40 million.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So, to give a little bit more backstory, all of this was kind of the slave trade auction thing has kind of happened because. And I'll let you guys go further back if you want, but I'm just going to start with the initial cause of this instance directly. What you had was a bunch of people trying to migrate from various places in sub-Saharan Africa to Europe. They were trying to get to what they saw was the European dream. So you had a lot of young people. Again, Africa has the youngest population in the world, I believe. So you had a lot of young people trying to get to what they believed was the European or the American dream based off what they saw on Facebook. So they were selling everything they owned, all of their goods, trying to make this journey to what they believed would be a better life. In 2014 or 15, I believe it was, Italy changed its immigration policies. Not just Italy, all of Europe went through a situation where they changed their immigration policies. Now all of a sudden it was a lot more difficult for those people to get in. The smugglers that were smuggling them in began charging higher and higher rates, and all of a sudden these people couldn't afford to be smuggled into Europe or be smuggled out of Africa even. So that's when you started having this whole auction thing really come to light, come to prominence, where now these smugglers would take people that they quote-unquote deemed indebted to them, and they would sell them to recover the debt that they felt like they were owed. I know it sounds extremely familiar. It should to
people in America. But that's people need to wake up, because that's what it is. Some of these people have been placed in this trade because of the debts that have been incurred, because like you said, they couldn't reach Europe. Like, that's real, and it's blew up from there.
All right, before we go in, the social media part, we really got to hit on that. Pat says something, and I think a lot of people jumped on this issue not fully understanding it. So that's why it's important that Pat is giving this timeline so people really understand what's going on there, because there is some misinformation. You're just seeing pictures and thinking that's what's going on, and it's not the case.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. Go ahead. Finish your timeline.
So now we come to a point now where, and it's also important to remember that this is not a new issue. I believe two years ago, roughly, give or take a couple months, the UN, the United Nations, put out a report detailing the growing slavery issue in Libya. So this is not anything new to a good chunk of people that have been paying attention. What's new is, as always, the excitement around it. UN knew when it closed its borders, when it made migration to the continent more difficult, it knew that there was a pretty, pretty high chance that it would increase the strength of the slave trade, the slavery situation in Northern Africa. So we also have that. And the other, before I shut up with my timeline, the other component that we have to look at when it comes to social media is not just the fact that people are misinterpreting, misunderstanding, misrepresenting, and just blatantly putting out false narratives. Even if the core of the narrative is true, if you believe a false narrative, how you're going to go about solving the situation could be completely off base. But the other component to that is, a lot of these young people, and I've read this and heard this from several African activists, young scholars, and even several young people that have successfully made the journey into Europe. One of the things that they're looking at to gauge their freedoms and their state of happiness is social media itself. So they can get on the Facebook and they see people talking about how awesome their life is, how this their life is, how that their life is, and all of the different things they can do and they can want to do and they should do. And they begin to internalize all of that, and they begin to look around at their surroundings, and they begin to think, well, I should be able to do that too. I want to do that too. And so that's spurring a lot of it. So social media is spurring a lot of things on a lot of different ends, and that becomes a leg in and of itself, because we could talk about how social media is impacting young people all over the world, not just young people, but older people. But I also, when you mentioned the social media component, it made me think about that other component to the social media side as well. I don't know if that's something we talk about here. It's not really relevant, but it is an interesting component. So with that, I'll shut up with my timeline. We can go back further if you guys want to go back further to make the connection to Muammar Gaddafi. I don't want to monopolize or anything like that. So
That's where I was going, because, like I mentioned earlier, a country in disarray can go any way. You know, I just made that up, but a country in that's
bars.
No, that's my inner side high. I'm letting that on. But it's Gaddafi was killed in 2011. If like when we were talking earlier, it feels like it was 2 years ago. Like it really does feel like it was 2 years ago, because the assassination of him is so fresh in my mind. But that happened in 2011. The information, the farthest back the information I've come across of saying people have been talking about this has been going back since like 2013, and now we see the depths of it now. And then reading furthermore, talking about the number of immigrants, people migrating from Libya and other North African countries trying to get into Europe, and when you're being denied getting into Europe, just like here in America, when they are talking about shipping back thousands of Haitians back to Haiti, you know. And so it's something that's been happening to people from black people, African people, all type of people throughout our diaspora. These things have been happening, and like I said, slave trades have, especially in North Africa, in the eastern coast of Africa, those slave trades have not stopped ever. A lot of those slave trades have been going on for a long time. That trans-Saharan slave trade, that hasn't completely ever stopped. And so now, with the age, like you said, with the age of social media, we're now seeing more and more of what's going on. But it does go back to a country who doesn't have any stability in its government, because I'm reading reports and I'm hearing things that the government is talking about. It had no idea this was going on. How the hell you have this many people being trafficked in and out of your country, and you have no idea what's going on? So it goes back to what I was talking about earlier before we started recording. See the video from the most unlikely source, which is Cardi B. And the way she said what she was saying, and because it's her, people not going to listen. Now, I don't like her music, but that don't mean I ain't going to listen. At least give a listen a ear, and if it sounds like you may know what you're talking about, but one of the things she was talking about is who has interest in what's going on in North Africa, in Libya. Who has interest in what's going on? Because the UN, the Libyan government, no other of these world power governments, nobody is doing anything about this. Everybody's saying it's horrible, but nobody's willing to do anything. Of course, we know in African nations, nobody's going to do anything, but follow the money, follow the trails. Who's benefiting off of this? Because these are the people that's allowing this to go on. And we can't sit around and just act like, oh my God, this is such a phenomenon. Shit like this been happening. Now it's time. I mean, we can use our voices and use our platforms to bring more light, but we have to do more. I feel like we need to do more than just bring light. I feel like that's one of the things we do in his day, is be able to break it down so we can make sense of what the hell is going on. You know what I'm saying? Oh, that sound crazy. You tell me.
Oh, that makes sense. And it's, you mentioned the Cardi B video, and Pat kind of tapped on the social media aspect of it. It's kind of sad that the only way we pay attention to something is because somebody create a meme out there. And as Pat alluded to earlier, a lot of that stuff, the pictures we saw, the graphics, weren't even necessarily the situation that's going on over there in Libya or whatnot. It's not even on part of that the continent of Africa. That happened somewhere else, X, Y, and Z. So what I got out of that, and I see people up in the uproar about it because social media, everybody's posting about it. We have a tendency to kind of, you know, like Pat said, we get excited about it. Like, oh, I got an issue. Let me go ahead and post about it. Let me repost and change my profile picture, you know what I'm saying, stop slave trade, this, that, and other. But are we really educating ourselves about what's going on, what's happening, why it's happening? We talking about Muammar Gaddafi and how he was taken out of power. He was pretty much killed, set up, and all that good stuff. Do we understand the cause and effect of what happened to it? And I think people really, you know, we get so excited when we see it on social media. We got another call, something I could post about, you know, say I could look good online and all that good shit. But I would implore people to, okay, yeah, you found a meme you like, it pisses you off. Educate yourself about it. That way you can learn about what's going on. And if there's a way for you to make some type of contribution to the efforts to stop what's going on over there, then yes, absolutely do it. But we shouldn't be finding out about all these things that are happening in the world just through memes and social media. Like, we kind of got to read. Like, the slave trade, that's nothing new. That's not something that just happened in the month of November and December. These are things that have been going on. Even when you just look at human trafficking as a whole, I mean, right here in America, we got human trafficking and children and sex slaves and all that kind of nonsense. So my thing is, don't let social media be the end source of all your stuff on these types of issues, because they're very complex and they have cause and effect. And I think we really got to analyze that as a society, as a people. But that's just my take.
And I like how you said, I like everything you said, but when you say cause and effect, we really, because social media is super powerful, and I don't feel like we pay enough respect to it when we utilize it. I mean, you go to another example, the Cameroonian soccer player, Samuel Eto'o. You know, everybody was talking about how he bought a plane to get the Cameroonian migrants out of Libya, and how he had offered up money to this, that, and the third. And, you know, he came out Wednesday and was basically like, "Nah, that's not true. I didn't do that." You know, but he's, and we're lucky enough that he has enough integrity to not accept credit for something he didn't do. But it does highlight how easy it is to start something on social media and just have it blow up way out of control. And even with, now I do want to go back to the Libyan issue, because the Libyan government, to a point Joe made, the Libyan government has denied the claim. Initially, they were denying that
they didn't know what was going on.
And the interesting part of that was, one of the sources that they used for their denial was a Donald Trump tweet that called CNN fake news. And they basically said, "This is fake news. They're trying to discredit our country and destroy our reputation internationally." So,
okay,
again, we get back to the power of social media. Mm-hmm. You know, where now an entire nation can use a tweet from the president to kind of just try to blanket an entire issue as being unfactual. So, again, we get back to the amazing power of social media. And the Libyan government, as Joe pointed out, is largely a leaderless state. It's largely a failed state. It's been that way ever since Muammar Gaddafi was killed. They don't have a strong leadership. The country doesn't really have the ability to enforce the rule of law en masse all over the country. There are hot spots of lawlessness all over the country. You're looking at basically a failed state. It's a government that does not have the capability to really do anything other than issue statements.
Right. Now, let me read y'all this. This is from gold.com. A CNN report last month brought slavery in Libya to wider prominence, with grainy video footage confirming the first visual evidence. And we're talking about the power of social media. But it was not until Manchester United's Paul Pogba celebrated a goal in his comeback match against Newcastle at Old Trafford a couple weeks ago that slavery in Libya forced its way into the general consciousness. Pogba crossed his hands and held them aloft and mimicked the man in chains. Many inside Old Trafford, and indeed watching around the world, were probably wondering what that signified. Thanks to Pogba's followers on Instagram, they basically cleared it up. But going back to the power of social media, on the other end, being able to actually use to get the story out, this young soccer player was one of the first to use that platform that he had to bring light to what was going on in Libya. Then you had other black soccer players around the world start doing it as well. And so this is just another way that social media, as a powerful tool that it is, can be used to get the message out. But one of the issues is, like you said, is a lot of the false stories do get out, and people do depend too much on the memes and things rather than doing research. But being able to understand that in a leaderless state, in a state like Gaddafi, in a leaderless state, and a lot more information is coming out about why Gaddafi is killed, and you know it gets down to people whether they want to believe it or not. But you know, understanding that he was trying to create an African Union that could create currency for Africa, only that's going to be backed by natural resources. And I read something that said Gaddafi had 150 kilograms, or not kilograms, but 150 like tons of gold and things like that, and just the resources that were able to be backed up. And we know the history that America has and the West has of overthrowing factions that they feel will pose a threat to what they have going on. So it's worth looking at. It's worth everybody peering their heads in. And all right, we have to stop living up under a rock. Our parents lied to us. All right, let's just be real. Our parents lied to us about the world we live in. And hell, your parents probably was lying too about the world we live in. This stuff has always been happening. This is not new in this world. America is a messed up place to be in. All these countries are messed up places to be in, especially if you're poor. That's what it is. That's what the world is. Let's stop acting so surprised about these stories. We have to understand that this is the reality of the world that we live in, and if we keep acting like this stuff don't happen, it's going to keep happening. This is what the world is. So how do we change it? First of all, we need to know what's going on, really. We need to stop wanting to not hear the stories. I'm not saying get to a point where you're consuming so much negativity that you desensitize yourself, but have a grip on the reality of the world that is in front of you, the one that you're living in. And we have to do this because we don't know what could happen in America that could cause anything to go wrong and that could threaten our safety or the perceived safety and freedoms that we do have in America. So we have to stop acting like these things are just, oh my God, it's outrageous and all these things, and you know, and then stop, and then never have the mindset that this can't happen here. It happened once, it could damn sure happen again. But this is what's going on. But being able to really piece the pieces together really helps us to really get an understanding of why this is going on. And instead of just being outraged, we need to have understanding. And when you are in a leaderless state and then money is involved, because who's really leading Libya like they're supposed to? Who's really getting the country back together, like the foundations and all that? Who's really getting that back together? And what interests do they have? What's their foreign interest, or what's their interest toward the Americas and things? All those questions have to be asked.
Yeah, I agree. Again, that cause and effect, that kind of goes back, well, you got to do some research, as I alluded to earlier, but that... You said so much into that, and there's a lot of it is going to be hard for people to digest, but this is the world we live in. Like, so people are waking up like, yo, there's still stuff like this going on in 2007?
It's never stopped, and
that's the hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, because we've seen, you know, some of the gains we made as a people, black people in the world. I get it. But you also got to understand, not everybody is getting those same gains. Not everybody's to that same level, degree, whatever the case may be. Those things are still happening. We see what we're going through right here in America as a black community. You don't think over there in Africa and other countries where they don't have the governments in place and stuff like that, or they're still being under colonial rule and things of that nature, that's still happening to this day in the continent of Africa. So people really got to, like, yes, it's happening. This is the world we live in. This shouldn't shock you at this point. And if it does, that just means you got to be a little bit more involved in what's going on in current events. But I guarantee you, like, when it comes to what was that one guy that came out, that big-ass thing, but we got it, like, 2 years late, that Coney thing. Y'all remember that?
Comey.
Coney, that general guy that was killing all the people in Africa, we got it like 2 years late and we started jumping on it, this, that, and the other. But what this shows you is that gap, or, you know, that void between us and the rest of the black world that's out there. And we got to kind of open up our minds, understand it's a lot of stuff going out there that we don't realize is happening right now in 2017. That's pretty much my point. This shouldn't shock you.
Well, and you guys bring up a lot of good points, again, to echo what Jamie started out with. But I think, like, when we begin to talk about these issues, they're so multi-layered. They're so complex.
Facts.
Like, when Joe talked about Muammar Gaddafi and developing the African Union, you know, now we get into banking system, we get into resources, now we begin to talk about foreign aid, and we have to talk about whether or not foreign aid is effective. But before we can do that, you know, how many people actually even know what foreign aid does?
Right.
How many people actually even know what foreign aid is, how it processes its way through the government, what is it intended to do? You know, like, how many people can sit around and just have a real conversation about foreign aid, which is largely a prerequisite for understanding what Muammar Gaddafi was trying to do with Africa, what a lot of the more revolutionary African leaders were speaking of when they would say, we don't want aid, we want markets. We don't want aid, we want markets. When they would say, get your aid out of my country. When you had these grassroots organizations in those African countries and in various other countries that receive aid, that I constantly say, I have a friend of mine that's a Somalian. She's a Somalian refugee living in America right now. Can't wait to go back to Somalia. She absolutely detests the UN. You ask her why? She'll give you a 3-hour long spiel about how their aid is ruining the life of the people in the country. But, you know, like, so how do we get into these issues? And the same issue is prevalent when we begin to talk about the slave trade in Libya, when we begin to talk about the economics and the finances that back that situation, when we begin to talk about how that situation came to be through the fall of Gaddafi, through the leaderless state that they're in now, the failed government that they have now, the slave trading in the auction, how does that tie in on an international scale? Before we can even begin to talk about what we can do to fix this problem, you've got to understand so many other issues that seem unrelated. And we aren't having the necessary depth and complexity presented in our conversations to talk about these things. Like, nowadays, people feel like they're doing their part because they raised awareness by sharing a post. Look, let me be honest.
People are still enslaved. Like that. I wish that's the most. I wish that's all we could do, but we have to do more. We have to try to do more.
Let me be bluntly honest for a minute. You sharing your funky ass post and having 3 extra people look at it is not raising awareness. That's not. Let's just be clear. If you have a platform of a couple thousand people, a couple million people, anything like that, you're raising awareness. Congratulations. You still ain't doing shit, but you can at least say that you're raising awareness. If you have a platform of your mama, your daddy, and your 3 best friends from high school that only log into Facebook once every few days, stop it. Stop it. So let's get that out the way first. Second thing we got to get out the way is we need to get out of thinking that all I have to do is donate to an organization and I've done my due diligence, especially if you haven't researched the organization that you're donating to. How do you know that organization is really for the people? Have you made contact? Do you understand their mission? Do you understand how they're going about solving the issue? Because there are a lot of organizations up right now and more pop up daily with the express purpose of preventing slavery in Libya.
Absolutely.
So how many of those are legitimately trying to do that, and how many of those are just trying to capitalize off of what's going on, and how many of those that are legitimately trying to do that have a thorough enough understanding of the situation to actually make a difference, to put a game plan together? Look, for most of you, the most powerful thing you could do at this point, outside of getting together and figuring out some massive scale resource shift that could help free a lot of people, is probably a political activity. Calling your congressman, making this a big issue. Call the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Send her an email. Send her whatever. Make this a bigger issue in the United Nations. I believe her name is Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Like, those things are probably the most powerful thing you could do. If that lady got, there are 45 million black people in America. If that lady got 40 million people contacting her, and hell, your kids can contact her too. I understand that a good chunk of that 45 million is kids. No reason why they can't send her a message too. If she got 40 million people contacting her on one issue, I guarantee that issue becomes a priority for her.
And it's one thing you said in that, Pat, that I think is important. The donation part of it. A lot of times with issues like this, we tend to be passive. And to me, sometimes, you know, the donation part, we don't know where those funds are going. We could be donating to something that's actually contradictory to what we're at, the objective we think it's going to. So a lot of times, like Pat said, if you just take that, if you just educate yourself, oh, what is that? Oh, I don't know what that is. Can y'all hear that?
What? You talking to you? What?
My fault. My computer was messing up. We're going to edit that part out. But anyway, if people look at the causes they're donating to and actually do research on it, you'll understand that you might not fully understand what these corporations or these people who collect the money, you don't know where that's going. So the smartest thing for you to do is educate yourself. And like Pat said, take up a political stance on these things. Contact the ambassador to the UN, all those types of things. Those are far more effective than being passive and just donating some money, like, set it and forget it. Like, no, actually get involved if you really, truly care. But just donating, man, I swear we got to get out of that, because a lot of times we'll donate millions and we don't know where those resources are going or if they're even getting to the people who need those resources.
We got to realize the UN ain't shit. And a lot of these other organizations, these supposed human rights organizations, Red Cross, they ain't shit. The organizations ain't shit. So you have to start making connections with people within these nations. It's a bit easier now with the internet and all these things that we have. It's a bit easier. I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's a bit easier than it was in the past. But we have to start getting connected with real organizations and real people on the ground in these places that have issues, rather than trying to go to these huge organizations. Somebody got to be willing to put in the work, because it has to be more than just talking about it. And, you know, we're gonna be on Nikki Haley's ass, so we're gonna be sending her stuff. But also, we're gonna be looking at different sources of things that we could get in contact to on our end, since we do have this platform. But best believe we're gonna be on Nikki Haley's ass. But we do want to use this platform to bring attention to it, to talk about it. So at least those people who have no idea what's going on, who follow us, now you have an idea what's going on, and you can contact Nikki Haley or get in contact with somebody over there. Do you use your internet? I know you've been on. If you know what Beyonce named her twins, then you should be able to find out some other information. Let's just be real, because we'll get on the information. Dude was on the internet showing me Adrian Broner and his waves the other day. So damn, if you can show me Adrian Broner and his waves, you can find out this information. Don't tell me you can't. You don't have the time, because you'll be full of shit.
I didn't even know Beyonce had twins. So, but I will say, contacting the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. is probably the most passive approach that I would deem acceptable. And that's just me personally. But if you're serious about the issue, you should be doing that and something else. Like, because contacting her is easy. That's a phone call. That's a fill out the contact information sheet. That's easy. You know, if you're serious about change, that's more difficult. I do agree with Joe. I think you should, all of us should be trying to develop direct connections with people that are over there. They speak English.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah, they do.
And even if they don't, learn another fucking language. How is that bad?
I tried that once and I failed it in high school, man. So that is pretty hard. I'm trash in foreign languages.
That's you know. Well, I didn't mess with you. But hey, man. But we do have another topic that we want to talk about. So I'm not gonna say this is a topic that we shouldn't speak about more. But we do want to get into what's happening in Zimbabwe. With Robert Mugabe being ousted as the president of Zimbabwe. What's the new buddy's name? I keep forgetting his name.
That's a good one.
I just forgot his name too. As soon as you said it, I was like, damn.
Just say the new guy. He figured
out. I would have said it anyway.
Emerson Man. Emerson. And you spell it MNANGAGWA. So we're gonna call him E. Emerson.
No, it's Emerson Mnangagwa.
That's Mnangagwa. All right, there it is. So Emerson Mnangagwa is now the president of Zimbabwe after Robert Mugabe, after a 3-4 day long siege within his house that the military of Zimbabwe basically held him on house arrest. And all of this comes after Emerson Mnangagwa was relieved of his duties as the vice president of Zimbabwe and Mugabe appointing his wife as the new vice president because his thing was when he dies, he wants his wife to take over. And so we're going to break down the impact and things that led up to that and the impact of that. Now, one thing I do know is the first thing that Mnangagwa vowed to do, he wasn't even 48 hours hot in the seat, was to give the land back to the white people who Mugabe took the land from. And I know that's one of the stands that Mugabe was hell-bent on, not letting any white folk have no land in this country. So, you know, we're going to assess the pros and the cons of Mugabe as president, and it's also of this fallout. I just think that when your first move is to do something for white folk, we can't trust you. That's just me. But, you know, what y'all guys think?
Now, it's, you know, what they're essentially doing, they took power, they seized control, and they're letting the colonists back in, and what they're going to find out is if they don't change how they're going about it, they're going to find themselves as another colony of the European Empire. That's essentially what's going to happen. The people are going to come, whether it be from whatever country, European nation, and take control of all the resources and control those resources for themselves and trickle it down to the people of that country, then they're going to find themselves oppressed again. However, this is still new. It's still kind of relevant right now. I want to see how it plays out, and I hope the guy that's in charge understands that. But as it stands right now, he's going back to just letting people who never had the good intentions of that country come right back in and seize control and land and have influence in the government. And that part is the part that can really land this country back in trouble again. Yeah.
So that means Buddy been aligning himself with those outsiders for the longest. So
yeah,
so he been planning to sell out.
Yeah, because he had to gain power from somewhere. So he has the military backing him. You've also got to have those outside influences to back you as far as money goes. That way,
and the rest of the government backing him.
Exactly. So, as far as the move goes, okay, that's how a military coup works. But I'm curious to know what's really the end goal for that the new guy that's coming in. But first, before we start talking about the future, that we got to understand how Mugabe came to fall, if you will. And I think Pat has some interesting points on that. I'm going to throw it to Pat real quick.
Yeah, so the fall of Robert Mugabe, we know that he was part of the military force. He was a leader in the military force that freed the Zimbabwes from, was then Rhodesia, from colonial control, renamed the country Zimbabwe, and became the first president of the country, and has been the only president that they've known for the past roughly 40
years.
Right,
under Zimbabwe, right.
So, recently, with him getting older, he's 93 years old, there have been a lot of people making a lot of moves and shakes about how to, who was going to follow him up, who was going to take power. Robert Mugabe was said to have said that he was going to rule until he died. And for a good chunk of time, it was believed that his vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, was going to be his predecessor. But recently, within the last 5 years or so, 5 or 10 years, his wife, Grace, is it Grace or Faith? I can't remember. Anyways, Grace, I think, is began to make her moves to take power. And her and the vice president began having these very strong, very public back and forths as they tried to firmly position themselves within power. Robert Mugabe eventually ended up firing Emmerson Mnangagwa, appointing his wife as his new vice president, which essentially meant she was in charge of the party and was, even though it's not a monarchy, was in position to take over when he died. And the military and the rest of the political sphere basically was like, no, we're not going to accept her. We're not. That's when you had the military move in. I think that was 2 or 3 days after he fired. It was a couple. It was within a week or two of him firing Emmerson Mnangagwa and appointing his wife that the military stepped in under the guise of trying to restore government and root out corruption. And they did not leave until Robert Mugabe resigned from his position. Emmerson Mnangagwa was ushered back in. And that's basically how Robert Mugabe's political career ended. Now, the interesting component of that is Emmerson Mnangagwa has already made his political appointments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm reading that now. Yeah.
And the general that was in charge of putting Robert Mugabe under house arrest has been named.
He's chief of cybersecurity, right?
Well, no, he's been named foreign minister. Okay. Which is, needless to say, a very, very, very powerful position. Very, very prominent, powerful position. So that's his reward. And you begin to wonder, and as you go down the list of a lot of his appointments, he's made a lot of appointments for people that have supported him throughout this endeavor. He's made a lot of appointments for people that don't necessarily have the best interest of the Zimbabwean people at heart. Even before Robert Mugabe left office, there were a number of people from all sides saying that Emmerson Mnangagwa was definitely not the hero that he was being waved as being in a lot of the European and other international news outlets. They were pointing out that he was just as devious, just as malicious as Robert Mugabe was. And we see a lot of that happening now in his political appointments. Now, there has been a lot of backlash in Zimbabwe to his political appointments, and he has since, a day after making all of his political appointments, made several changes to those political appointments. But it's a very interesting situation. I don't want to, again, talk too long or monopolize the conversation, but I think that's a brief synopsis of what's come to pass.
Yeah. I was just looking at the article now. He named Patrick Chinamasa as finance minister, Air Marshal Perry Shiri, land minister, and Major General Sobhuiso Moyo, foreign minister, among other appointments. He brought back many faces from the Robert Mugabe era, which could disappoint Zimbabweans who had been expecting a broad-based government and a break with the past. Chinamasa, a former finance minister in Mugabe's government, moved to a newly created Ministry of Cybersecurity in the reshuffle last month. It's saying President Mnangagwa is under pressure to deliver, especially on the economy, which is in the grip of severe foreign currency shortages that have seen banks failing to give customers cash. He told heads of government ministries on Tuesday that he was putting together a learner government, which would see the merging of some departments to enhance efficacy. So
now real quick, and I want to point out, Sobhuiso Moyo, I think, is the general who played a prominent role in the military takeover. But this is where we as people all over the world have to pay more attention. I don't understand why people felt like a 75-year-old man from the exact same party as Robert Mugabe is going to signify a different government.
Right. Right. He's been groomed somewhat by this man, and as much time as he spent with Mugabe, the way his line of thing, yes, he may have principles that's different, but the foundation is set.
Right. He's 75, for one. This man has been with Robert Mugabe for all of Zimbabwe's existence. And then he's from the exact same party. The exact same party is still in power. If this man's ideals were that much different from Mugabe, he would not be in the exact same party. But then we also have to acknowledge that older people tend to view the world similarly. Now, they might have different morals and values that color their perspective, but they tend to be very similar in their thinking of what's possible and what is not possible. This man is 75. He's not 45. He's not 35. He's not some fresh young spring chicken or whatever with brand new ideas. This is a 75-year-old man.
Yeah.
And to that point, I think, like we were talking about earlier offline, is a lot of the leaders sometimes in particular situations, they don't know how to relinquish power to a younger ruling class, if you will. His intentions were to be in power until he died, you know. And to me, that just seems like you said, there's no new ideas coming in through there. There's not, you know, a new breath of experience. And it doesn't seem like he was molding someone to continue in the tradition or take the country to the next step, because it's real easy. Okay, if I die, my wife take over. Nah, bro, you need to have somebody else that's capable of running the country, X, Y, and Z. You know, this is just from the outside looking in, but I think that was definitely contributed to his downfall. I mean, you got other people who want to see the country go in a different direction, explore different options. So as a leader, it just would seem like he would have been more perceptive to having, you know, more people involved and not just keeping it as a monarch. We're going to keep it all in the family. When I die, my wife take over, and when she dies, my son, this, that, and other. And I think that was a part of the piece of the change of power that occurred there in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And we got to remember, too, Grace Mugabe is 52, so she is substantially younger than the 93-year-old Robert. But, Jamie, you bring up a good point, and that's a point that we have to, like you said, we were talking about it before the show. Black people, period, all around the world, I'm not even speaking to culture groups at this point, I'm speaking to melanated people, period. We've got to do a better job of grooming the next generation of leaders. All around the world, we're failing because somebody dies and there's nobody to take that person's place. You know, we're failing because essentially people are failing to uphold one of the most powerful and one of the most important tenets of leadership, which is to groom new leaders.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a leader and you're not grooming new leaders, then you're not really being an effective leader.
Yeah. So part of leadership is empowerment. If you're not empowering the people up under you, then essentially you're starting the time on your own demise as a leader.
Right, and I think we saw this with Robert Mugabe, where he started out as a revolutionary, powerful figure, and, you know, by the time he resigned, his country, the people in his country wanted him gone. Now, I do, and I know Joe is going to bring up the fact that there were outside influences involved, and I agree with that. I do agree there were outside influences involved, not only in what happened between Emmerson Mnangagwa and Robert Mugabe and Grace Mugabe, but also in shaping the opinions of the Zimbabwean people. But we have to remember that those rifts are allowed to be created. Those rifts are created because of cracks that are already there in failed leadership, in a failure to empower the populace, in a failure to create a culture of change, in a failure to create a culture of you know, pride and continuance. It's a mess. This is a go ahead, Joe.
Well, now, before that, Patrick and I have been talking about this. We've actually been keeping a close eye on this Mugabe situation since we first learned about the House arrest. So we've been following it pretty close. And some sources I have come across have speculated that China has had some dealings in the coup that happened with Mugabe. Now, I do know China has been an ally of Mugabe in Zimbabwe since Mugabe came to power. And I've been making jokes the whole time that China is the reason, but I don't think China is like one of the main ingredients. But I do think that we have to look at all different, and we have to look at every piece of evidence, everything that's going on. Now I'm reading now that China has been more of an ally to Mugabe than anything, but we don't know. There's no real evidence to say that Mnangagwa has had any dealings with the Chinese government that has helped him gain any type of power of anything. But we do know that there are some type of outside influences. Some information is going to come from somewhere, because it's just the way and the manner in which this happened and how swiftly it happened. It just, you know, everything is not on the table right now. And the backing of the military with Mnangagwa and all that stuff, somebody has something now. There's no hard evidence, even though I do have my jokes about China, but there's no hard evidence to link the Chinese government to Mnangagwa. But it's amazing how we talk about the manner in which black people in America get down, and we fail to look at the way black people have been colonized around the world. Like, this is real around the world. Like, we're going to find out exactly what Mnangagwa is made of, like, real soon. Real, we finding out everything that Mnangagwa is made of. And like I say, your first move that you make is to give land back to white people after you've been under a man who's fought hard to keep. So obviously, the whole time Mugabe been fighting to keep white people out in power, Mnangagwa was behind the scenes disagreeing with that. And so the question is, how long has Mnangagwa been plotting to take over? You know, is it something that just came up because he was fired, or did Mugabe fire him because he found out that Mnangagwa was trying to take over?
And I think that's a combination of both. I think there was a rift, you know, that power struggle. A lot of it just boils down to ego. You know, one side, they want to stay in power until they die. The other side wants to see, it looks like, more progressive changes, X, Y, and Z. And instead of both sides, you know, kind of just coming to a level of, I'm pretty sure you take away the ego, the outside agitators, because I'm pretty sure there were people whispering in the general's ear, like, hey, you should do this. You should be in charge. Then on the side, yo, why you got this guy as vice president? You know what I'm saying? I'm your boo. Won't you put me there? You know, this is simplifying it because I'm an asshole, but it just seems like a lot of ego was involved, and if both sides could have came to an agreement, I'm pretty sure a better way forward versus a military coup and the transfer of power than transferring, you know, property, land, and resources to outsiders who help get you into power. I think there's a better way to go about it, but like you said, in the coming months and years, we'll really figure out what's going to go happen in Zimbabwe. Well,
I mean, and then if you were, like, my bad, Pat, but another thing, if you're really trying to transition, like Pat said earlier, if you're trying to transition away from the way Mugabe did things and the effects and the people we had influence on, why would you put them on your staff?
That's
true.
And
the other component of this is, because we have to keep it, we have to look at Grace Mugabe, because her appointment as vice president is what set all this off. She is not a popular figure at all. The Mugabe family, everybody outside of Robert, have distanced themselves from her. She hasn't spoken to any of them in 2 years. They call her aggressive. They say she's power hungry. They say she's disrespectful to their elders. They say she doesn't take care of the problems. You know, and then, you know, you go into this issue, even in terms of the nation, where when she appeared in public, there will always be a social media cry that would get louder every time she would appear that would compare her to his first wife, Sarah Francesca Mugabe, I believe they called her Sally Mugabe, who his family still adores, who the nation as a whole still adores. You know, they still look up to her. She died in 1992. So that's also another component of it, is how much of it is Emmerson Mnangagwa doing whatever fuck shit he did to stir up trouble, and how much of it was people just really, really, really disliking this woman, and Robert Mugabe just completely misreading the situation and his ability to, or, you know, the people's trust in his ability to make decisions. Like, so there are a lot of different sides. You know, we look at Emmerson Mnangagwa because we can see what he's doing. You know, and I agree with you that. That whole, within 48 hours, you make a statement about white farmers. Like, that's some fuck shit. But we've seen fuck shit like that all over Africa. I mean, in 2014, I believe it was, Zambia, a country in Africa that is less than 1% white, had a white vice president that was eventually acting president for a few years. So, and interestingly enough, that comes to mind because Emmerson Mnangagwa was actually educated at the University of Zambia. So they're not connected, but it pops in my head. So anyway,
now what's funny is if you Google coup in Zimbabwe, some of the first stories that come up is China. This is from CNBC. China alleged to have influenced Zimbabwe coup and set to benefit from Mugabe's replacement. So it's just, that's funny. That's funny. I like I say, still no hard evidence, but that's funny. I just said that. I Googled that and that popped up.
The deal with China is getting involved all over Africa. And unlike European money, China will give you money and not give a damn about how you run your country.
Yeah.
And not only that, but they give more money. So if you get money from the United States or the United Nations or any country in Europe or any of these Western countries, not only are we going to expect a certain return, But we also expect to have some control over you politically, and we will leverage the money we give you for political power. China, not only, and I'll say this again, not only will they give you more money, but they don't give a damn how you run your country.
Right.
And so with that, their influence over nations that don't want to be democratic, that don't want to necessarily deal with humanity issues, that don't want to have to cater to outside people telling them how to do things, their influence is growing. Their influence is growing all over Africa. Their influence is growing in the Middle East. Their influence is growing everywhere there is a country that needs aid.
Right, right. So, I mean, man, look at here. Talk about some real gangster shit. Y'all can listen to Rick Ross and them if you want to. Real gangsters take countries.
Yeah, this is definitely a gangster move by And you know what Grace Mugabe did? That was a gangster move too. You know, we gotta give her credit too. They both executed some gangster moves. His was better than hers.
Yeah. Basically, she got outwitted, out-militarized, out. Like, he had more resources to bring to the table. He had more resources, and it worked out. So, gangster.
Jamie, you've been quiet, man.
Nah, I'm just saying back what you're saying. I agree with it, man. I just, my hopes is that it just doesn't become another puppet government, which it looks, all signs point to, it looks like it will turn into another puppet government. But the continent right now, I really wish leaders of Africa would all come together and kind of stabilize that region. One thing, you mentioned something about China. China's all over the continent because China ain't got too many damn people. Everybody knows that. So they're looking for different places where they can, you know, put certain parts of their population that has resources. Who has more resources than the continent of Africa? So you have China going in and making deals with a lot of these governments. The key thing is if you got a puppet government in, you'll have a country come in, take all the resources, change the whole complexion of the country, and the people who've been on the land, who were born to the land, they're out in the cold and they have nothing. I mean, you can look at South Africa as case in point. I mean, Miss America, the lady who just won, she's from South Africa. How the hell
she
is that
white, wasn't she?
Yeah. So people were shocked. Like, oh, I'm like, no, but South Africa's a colony of what, Britain or whatever. So it's just like, yo, man, we in the future, I hope this doesn't become one of those cases where a foreign entity comes in, takes over the country, and the people of it now become second-class citizens. So this is kind of, you know, unfortunately a wait and see, but all signs are pointing to this being some type of puppet government and this guy just giving up all the resources of that country to a foreign entity.
You know, that's a good point you make about South Africa, especially the point of people not knowing. A lot of it, like, that pretty takes me back to the 2000 Olympics, 2016 Olympics, when the white dude with no legs was running for South Africa.
Yeah.
And I remember on my timeline, everybody was like, what? There's a white dude running for South Africa? I was like, y'all really have no clue what's going on in South Africa.
Man, white people been in South Africa. When you talk about South Africa, the representation of South Africa is white.
That's a fact.
Like, it really shows that there is this extreme lack of understanding of Nelson Mandela, Winnie Mandela, the apartheid.
Don't get me started on him.
Like, there's just an extreme misunderstanding of that whole situation.
I don't think people understand what apartheid was, is, and how it's still happening.
True.
I honestly believe that.
I agree with that.
I think if you ask the normal person who's not on even people on the continent probably don't know that, but most people don't know what apartheid was. We know who Mandela was, but do we honestly understood what he was fighting against? But apartheid, I mean, even though supposedly it's no longer, it still is in Britain. I mean not Britain, South Africa. Well, Britain, South Africa, same thing, if you will.
Yeah, it is same thing. But see, and I think we need to have a show on Mandela, because you know, I don't have favorable things to say about the fallout in South Africa after he became president, and basically was like, we need to share the land with the white people, and the white people took all the land. So, you know, it's amazing about the things. Like, we're not up on a lot of things that we need to be politically. We really don't understand how things are really ran in this world, and I think that contributes to us being behind a lot and being surprised about all the things that happen. So, and we got to do a better job of learning the world and learning how things really work, and really seeing the extent and the depth of the colonization of the minds, because the people on the African continent, their minds are just as colonized as our minds are here in America. You might have had a slightly different version of slavery and racism and all the other stuff and colonization, but nevertheless your minds were colonized just like our minds were colonized.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's just being able to look at these things that's going on in the world and like really, really understanding, man, this real. This real. Like, this is real, real, real. So stop with the bull, get off the boo boo.
And it goes back to one critical element that we honestly just got to take a few seconds and just understand. Read. Just read. I'm not saying I sit back all day and read 12 hours a day, but before I get on my timeline or whatever, social media, I make sure I read the articles. That way I'm least up on current events. And if I see something like, you know, what's going on in Libya, what's going on in Zimbabwe, I just don't look at the surface information. I actually do a little bit of due diligence to actually, okay, let me get a better understanding. That way, you know, if I do want to act, I know how to act, and I'm not just arbitrarily posting stuff on Facebook and social media, whatever the case may be, feeling like I'm doing something. But in this case with Zimbabwe, I think, honestly, a lot of it's just, unfortunately, just wait and see how this all plays out, see how this country interacts with other countries on the continent, and hopefully, yeah, like I said earlier, I hope it's not a puppet. He's not going to be a puppet for other
seems
countries.
Like it. Seems like it already.
All signs are pointing to it, absolutely. But
all signs are pointing to fuck boy.
But you know, let's. Unfortunately, it's going to be definitely a wait and see. But again, these countries sometimes the change in leadership is so volatile. He could be in a year in power for maybe a year. To somebody's like, nah, bro, you selling us out. The next thing you know, his ass is overthrown. So it's not like I don't think now it's going to be like how Mugabe was in power for, what, damn it, 40 years almost. So if this guy really starts selling out and the people, that country, ain't with the shits, I think they'd give him the fuck up out of there. But that's yet to be seen. So
We're going, huh?
You can't call the president of Zimbabwe a fuckboy.
Why?
Joe just did that.
Why? Joe, what makes him not capable of being a fuckboy? Fuckboys come in all shapes, sizes, fashions, and forms, no matter what your profession is.
Well, we gonna have to figure something. You need a code, Joe. How we gonna get sponsors? You calling the leader of a national country?
Hey, but that's what he's doing.
That's crazy. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, my bad. But that's what he's doing. I call it like it is. Okay, y'all gotta let me know.
No,
say, don't call.
Good. We just got to figure out another way to get sponsors. Cause we
yeah, you just ruined our whole 2018 slate of sponsors.
Hey, man.
There goes Coca-Cola, Joe. God dang it.
Did he just call Emerson Mnangagwa a fuckboy? Yeah, no. No, distance.
All right, I mean, you know. Hey, see, look at what he's doing.
Nah, I got you.
We just gonna have to cancel sponsors and get like direct subscriptions from our listeners or something.
If you real about yours, come sponsor us. Mm-hmm. We got a sponsor from Tony's gas station on Lake Bradford, so.
Don't he sell crap?
Nah, I don't know. He said, nah, but really, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably do. I mean, the area in the hood, who knows? Who knows? But, hey. But, man, that's what it is, though. Any of y'all got any parting shots before we close it down?
Same thing as I always say, man. Y'all be cool out there. Pay attention to what's going on. Politically, I think a lot of people are starting to wake up. Keep that momentum going. If there's one thing I'll encourage everybody to do, if you started off with something, chanting something, some type of cause, your champion, see that shit through. Don't just hop and just knob gobble on every little new issue that comes out because it's cool on social media. Do a little bit of due diligence and research and show a little bit of passion towards something and see it through. Who knows? You could be a difference maker. All right, that's me being optimistic. Chances are you might not be, but stop being a fucking lazy ass and just do something other than fucking bitch and cry about some shit. Go read a book. If you just educate yourself on something, that's far more effective than you just doing fuck shit on Facebook and Twitter. And, yes, I'm on Twitter now, and my follower game is trash. So feel free to follow me on Twitter.
What's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, at J-A-Zonic. That's J-A-Y-A-Z-O-N. Oh, oh shit, I can't even spell. J-A-Y-A-Z-O-I-N-I-C. Yeah, follow me on Twitter. That's where I'm at.
Hey, there, Pat, you got some parting shots.
Power to the people.
Man, you like Russell Simmons say the same thing every week.
Yep. That's how you get people to listen, man. That's,
yeah. Hey, man.
It's
black. Hey,
hold on, let me make sure I spell that right. I'm slow as shit right now. That's J-A-Zonic, J-A-Y-A-Z-O-N-I-C. Yeah, I spelled it right. Fuck, I'm retarded. All right, my fault. All right, that's all I got.
Hey, man, you know me. Make sure you get a copy of my book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 2, Central Americans, available on my website at www.ontheshoulders1.com. Visit my website. Follow me on Instagram at On the Shoulders One. Make sure you follow the Freedom Train Network on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Subscribe to the Freedom Train Network on the Freedom Train Podcast on iTunes and Google Play. Subscribe to the Fix Sports Podcast on iTunes and Google Play. Subscribe to the Lessons from the Screen on iTunes and Google Play. And subscribe to Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tobel on iTunes and Google Play. The Freedom Train is going down. The network is growing, and we're taking over.
Shortcut, real quick. If people just go to iTunes or Google Play and type in Freedom Train, everything will come up.
Everything come up. Go to iTunes or Google Play, type in Freedom Train, and we there. So with that being said, two fingers in the air, split them apart like a player, chump that deuce. We'll holler.